Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
When was the last time you refreshed your bedding? Sleep cooler with Avocado's naturally breathable, certified organic sheets. Choose from GOTS certified organic cotton, linen, or hemp, all made safe certified to the highest standards of non-toxic safety, delivering the ultimate in luxury, sustainability, and style, and a deeper, more restorative sleep. Join Avocado's mission to be one of the world's most sustainable brands at avocadomattress.com.
All right. This is the first ever Turned Out a Punk live on YouTube. I got my man Woj here. You may know Woj from other appearances on Turned Out a Punk. You may know him from his work in the mighty band Cold World. You may know him from some behind-the-scenes design work. Woj, you kind of do a lot of different things in the worlds of culture.
I get around. I'm here and there.
Well, and I'm blessed to have you here so we can talk about punk rock. This is, of course, like we used to do. I used to do a podcast, and still occasionally we'll do a podcast with Chris O'Toole called Turn Out a Punk Footnotes. But this is something that Woj and I have been talking about doing for a very long time. And I think there'll be other people joining us at different times. But this is going to be a general kind of wrap up show, but also just a chance to kind of talk about punk rock news and the goings on in the worlds of subculture, broadly speaking.
Yeah, maybe the name could be like a rip on like the Bill O'Reilly F It, We'll Do It Live, like Punk It, We'll Do It Live, or you know, something like that.
I heard they suck live. In reference to NoFX.
Yeah, okay. I don't know how we'd flip that. I'd heard they...
they rule live?
Stream live.
They stream live. There we go. Yeah. I already spilled tea all down my shirt. Like this was not a video podcast thing. I'm forgetting that people can see me now. Also, I should have probably worn a clean shirt. I feel... Luckily, I shaved my head, so it looks like I'm bald by choice.
Yeah, you got a fresh baldy. It looks good.
I do. I definitely bought by new clippers yesterday because now my kids use my clippers.
Oh,
there's no Oi songs about that. There should be like an Oi song about getting older and then your kids are now using your clippers.
Yeah.
A good retirement Oi record.
Fetch me clippers.
Fetch me clippers, mate. a song about going Oi at 40 when you start. I guess there was that involuntary skinhead song by Slumlords.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It kind of addressed it.
I've been watching a lot of. Me and my wife have been, sorry, ladies. Me and my wife have been watching a lot of British, as if any ladies are listening to this.
There are a few. Yeah. Yeah. Look at the demographic breakdown. There's, I think it's like 10%, 15% of the audience.
Okay. That's pretty good. Yeah. We've been watching a lot of British, cop drama shows. Mm-hmm. Like we've just been like going through them like series after series. And the one we just watched, the one woman has like a secret life as a skinhead, as a teen that she's hiding. And, you know, it shows her taking off her rings and she has like skin. It's dope.
Lizzie. That's awesome. There's one that I saw on a plane and it took place in Scotland and in the guy's apartment in it, it had a flyer for the Scottish Freeze. Mm. Who are amazing. They got this record Paranoia that's like a fantastic single. And
I've seen it. I've never heard it though.
It's good. It's like really
its existence.
Yeah, it's really catchy and like, yeah, it's great. And just like the weirdest, most obscure reference to see in a British cop drama. This was more like a guy getting out of prison kind of drama.
Okay.
But did you watch Slow Horses though?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what kicked it all off, was that and this other show, Marcella.
Oh, and
we went off there, like Line of Duty, and now we're on The Unforgotten. That's the one with the skin.
There's also like the ones from the 80s, right? Like Prime Suspect and
yeah, that Prime Suspect is like their like what's our shit, like
Law and Order maybe.
Yeah, it's like their Law and Order from what I could tell, just because it's been on for so long. And you know, so we haven't tackled that because that's like getting into like Doctor Who or something, you know?
Like, definitely Doctor Who's like my kids have started watching it, and to me it still feels like an impenetrable world of lore.
I stepped to it, we randomly like picked out like a early 2000s season and watched it, and we watched the first few episodes and it was dope, but for some reason we came off of it, but it was cool.
Was that with Peter Capaldi as Doctor Who?
Peter Capaldi. There's only a way I could quickly see. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's the punk Doctor Who.
Oh, he's punk.
He was in a punk band with Craig Ferguson called the Dream Boys.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic. Once again, Scottish punk.
Yeah. Scottish punk.
It always comes back to punk, as you know, talking to me, Woj. It takes like three moves before I force you back to talking about punk rock.
Yeah, man. As soon as I think I'm out, you pull me back in.
I tell you, that's what this is. This is like, now I got you in the, but I feel like, you know, over the course of the years, we've seen like pro wrestling have a punk rock takeover.
Mm-hmm.
The worlds of streetwear has had a bit of a punk rock takeover. So I feel like I've been proven right 10 years in.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's good or bad that it's been penetrating these worlds, but it's happening for sure.
It is definitely happening. I think we're going to start seeing like the hardcore cash in now. I think that's going to be the next wave that we're going to witness. And this podcast will be here to document it all.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when people tell you it's a good thing and that good things are going to come from, you know, this sucky band being big is great because that means we're going to get, you know, it's like, how long are we going to be waiting for the good stuff that follows that you're talking about? You know, well, no, cause we'll be here. I'll have a beard live streaming and we'll be talking, you know?
Yeah. This is like Reaganomics, right? You're just waiting for it to trickle down, and eventually the good will trickle down to everybody.
Yeah, we'll be here and I'll be like, it was 40 years ago that Code Orange went to the Grammys. I still haven't heard a demo that I like.
Well, that's part of the quest too, is to find demos that Woj likes. So please send them all your links to all your
bands. Don't. It'll never happen.
But we are here to talk about punk news, good and not so happy news. And I think we're starting off with a bunch of not so happy news in recent passings. Andy Mueller from Gang of Four passed away. Clem Burke from Blondie and the Ramones passed away. Al Baril from the Mighty SSD passed away. And Ricky from the band Seringai, who are an Indonesian punk band. Aryan from the Seringai was on the podcast. Ricky is someone who I only got to know a little bit over Instagram. Someone I was hoping one day would come on the show and we get to talk a little bit more. But tragically, he passed away just after playing a show in Japan, kind of a dream show for them as a band, and then got backstage and just didn't make it out of the show that night. And he's now... his body has been returned home and he's been kind of put to rest. And so there's been some closure for his bandmates and as they're working on kind of, I guess, dealing with the tragedy now on a personal level. And just unbelievably sad. And I feel like all these, I never got to meet Andy, but I definitely, you know, Clem was on the podcast and Alice when I got to know a little bit and Ricky as well. Very, very sad. Huge losses in all of them, and all of them in my experience were nothing but incredibly cool people and prime examples of why you should meet your heroes in punk rock occasionally. So you met Al. Did you get to meet Al?
No, I never met Al. I have a weird relationship with Boston hardcore.
Yeah. I always think of you as a Boston guy at times because of you living there. But I'm always like, oh yeah, no, it's definitely a different vibe. I think Boston is a place where, Boston is somewhere that, like, I think if you're from there, you have a different relationship to the music than from outside of it sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, one of the funniest things that Alex Russin has ever said to some that I've heard is that, 10 Yard Flight, first good Boston hardcore band.
That's insane.
I love bringing that out. Cause I'm like, couldn't have said it better myself, my friend.
Wait, so what would be your number one exclaim pick if you're going to pick out of all the exclaim bands?
I mean, what are there? There's SSD. What else is Exclaim? DYS. Yo, I don't like any of them. Dead ass. Like
Jerry's Kids, like not even like the Boston punk stuff more. Like the
I like that a little more because there's a little something more to grab onto. But yeah, like I don't. It doesn't have like. I don't know, like, cause I'm not like a stripped down guy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like I was listening to prepare in preparation of this episode, I was listening to some previous, you know, episodes of Turnout of Punk. And what's the dude from Iron Lung?
Jensen.
Jensen. Yeah. Jensen. Like I was listening to that one and I'm like, man, this episode's like as boring as his bands, man. Like, just because to me, like, oh like, I know his bands are good. You know what I mean? But I'm thinking, yeah, this is what we have to, this is what I could thank for, like, Mind Eraser and all of Connor's in DC boring ass power violence bands, where it's just like, you know, where that kind of, that like real stripped down stuff is just like, it's style over. I don't get the
insanity of this to me is the fact that you like then will turn around and rate some like wild out on the floor, silk screen, burlap sack, 7-inch cover band over like these crushing power violence bands.
Yeah. I don't know, because there's like emotion to it, to where the crushing power violence, it's more like I could tell that they just care about like the guitar tone and the sound of it. And it's no, there's almost no, to me, I'm not picking up on any actual like emotion or anything being conveyed. Like a couple, I like some of the stuff, like some Slap-A-Ham stuff. And, but that stuff seemed more intense. And I don't know, like, I need a little, I'm an emo man. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I think this is going to be good because you and me have just like, we're on the page on some stuff and then so very clearly on very different.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I understand why people like that. And I understand, like, it's good, but I think we had this conversation before on the podcast where like that, like good hardcore, like that, it just gets down to like this, like ticking boxes. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't know, it just gets kind of boring to me, you know?
Okay. Well, we will, I'm sure, have to cross this bridge many, many times over the course.
And another thing, I feel like Boston people, their sensibilities, they intellectualize dumb things.
Yeah, well, it's a university town.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a college town. So there is like, I think that's the other part of the punk rock that kind of comes out of there is like a little bit more art school for that first wave of stuff, a little more intellectual. And I think for our generation in particular, there's a little bit more sort of the intellectual. I think ever like Cooch and CeCe kind of like deep head digging into it. And I think also because Boston's got like so many libraries, so many like institutions of knowledge. It just sort of like breeds that kind of level of deep dive research.
Yeah. I mean, you know, then they're just going to deep dive themselves into never having a female listen to their bands for enjoyment ever in their career. And that's fine if that's how they want to rock.
That has definitely changed now. I think, like, you know, this is 90s logic.
It is. Yeah, it is for sure. You know what I mean? But
yeah. 90s was definitely different than now. I think there's been like,
I'll say 2000s too. You know what I mean?
Early like, 2000s. Yeah. Which I look at as being an extension of the 90s, pre-Vice getting into hardcore. I think the huge thing that kind of happened in the 2000s was like Noisy loving hardcore and all of a sudden bands like Coke Bust getting written up in Vice magazine. And it went from being something that was very insular to being something that did have upward mobility and potential.
Yeah. And I just kind of think all of that brought us to a place where, and I was never even like really a huge fan of these bands myself. Maybe I didn't except for a couple of them, but I guess I didn't realize like it's a kind of like, didn't realize what we had until they're gone kind of thing. But there's not like a modern, like Kid Dynamite or a, I don't know, something like that. Like
I think it's probably Joyce Manor, maybe, you know, or like, yeah, you know, it's obviously a little more poppy than
that's completely separate, you know. Joyce Manor, you know, like I don't know, like
I think that's your Philly bias showing though with Kid Dynamite, because Kid Dynamite outside of East Coast hardcore, I think was looked at as being more of a pop punk epiphat band and less of a hardcore band. I think people have a different relationship to them, in particular from Philadelphia.
I mean, I just mean like one of those kind of bands, like a Lifetime or like something like that, where everyone's singing along and up front, and it kind of like.
That's happening. Joyce Manor, like you look at those Joyce Manor shows, it's like tons of people up front singing along, or like Military Gun or those types of bands. There's like Drug Church, you know, people up front singing along to that stuff. It seems like.
Yeah,
I don't relate to it like I do Lifetime and Kid Dynamite.
Those aren't unity bands, though. They're like something else.
It's gotten so much bigger, though, now, right? Like, what we're talking about back then, like that Kid Dynamite demo.
Yeah.
Like, what, 1,000 copies of that thing that circulated? Like, Kid Dynamite was huge because they would play 300 people a night.
Yeah,
I stole the, play like 10,000.
I stole people. The Kid Dynamite demo from this girl's apartment in Boston, and the Kid Dynamite demo and the Shark Attack demo, maybe. What was her name? She used to date the singer of Over My Dead Body. I forget her name, and I'd like to apologize to her for stealing those two demos from her, but I was a different person then, and I wouldn't do that now.
It's very good if you publicly admit it too. Like now you've got like that.
Yeah, I feel like the statute of limitation is up, but it was, I think we stayed at her house for the triple release of Death Threat, AN, and what was the other?
Carry On, wasn't it? No, that was after.
Yeah, it was like a triple Bridge Nine record release.
Was it
Shark like Attack?
Striking. Oh, maybe it was Strike. No, but was the Shark Attack reissue they did of the second 7-inch?
Maybe, but yeah, it was. It was like a triple release for that. That show was banging.
That would have been a good show. I don't have a Shark Attack demo. I was just looking. I have the Kid Dynamite demo, but that was like a crazy period for demos. Like when you think about like that In My Eyes demo that had 2,000 copies of it circulating around then. And it's like, damn, that was as good as that record that came out.
Yeah. I got a cool demo recently. Turmoil demo.
Oh, damn.
Pretty cool.
90s vibe right there.
Yeah.
Does it got like a big sticker on the back of the tape? An oversized label? Damn. Yeah, now we can do, now this is on video, we can show off our stuff a lot more.
Yeah. They have a cool pick in here.
Yeah, I love my... Oh, yeah.
hockey jerseys.
That's something that has not come back in hardcore at all. Basketball jerseys, I think, have come back a little bit now, but the hockey jersey.
Hockey jerseys are back in streetwear right now. All jerseys are big in streetwear right now.
But baseball, too. You don't really see a lot of bands rocking the baseball shirts like Leeway style.
Yeah. It'll come back around.
It'll come back. Yeah. Cool. Well, that's what this show's going to be all about, coming back around. Speaking of coming back around, this week on the show, I'm going to say probably my favorite person in the world to talk to, Steve McDonald. His brother Jeff, probably a close second. Woj, you're third, but no, just kidding. You're number one. But, and then Andrew Reich, who's also right up there as a favorite person to get to talk to, coming on to talk about the Red Cross movie, which you haven't seen this thing, the Red Cross doc yet?
No, I really want to see it though.
It's amazing because it really does kind of try to capture this band that you can't really pin down. Like, they're not, as they say in this, they're not really a punk band. They're not really a hardcore band, but they're not really like an alt rock band either. They're just sort of this like,
yeah,
band that transcends time and place. And
I mean, I'd say that they were a punk band, like
very early on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know, they're arguably like the first two, like LA hardcore kids in a lot of ways too, like being like just these kids going in, hearing about Black Flag on the radio, going down and meeting Black Flag, auditioning them and basically becoming like the house opening band for Black Flag for a little bit. At 12 and I guess 11 and 13, I think the first time they met the Black Flag guys, they kind of were the prototypical hardcore kids.
Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy, like a parallel between them and, like, you know, like a similar thing I think of, like maybe like Harley on the East Coast, or like the young kids in New York, to where like you hear these guys riffing on your episode about life and stuff, and their background is clearly so different than these New York cats who are out there on the streets, you know, in a similar way in New York. And it's like, you know, half of them didn't even make it, and these guys are like, I just got back from Coachella or whatever, you know. Like, it's like, dude, the LA hardcore and punk scene is so interesting to me, you know?
Yeah, LA in general, like, obviously there's some unbelievable poverty in LA, and there's also like crazy violence and all that kind of stuff, which is also storied in its own way. But just the weird opportunities for things to kind of happen, or just sort of like the fantastical way things seem to exist there. Like, even like a couple years ago when there's that show outside under a freeway and the cops are driving by and people are setting off fucking road flares. Could not imagine that happening.
It looked like the fucking Foot Clan's lair, or what are they called in the
Foot Soldiers.
it
like that. I could not see that happening in even Toronto. Like,
yeah.
But yet in Los Angeles, it can kind of happen. Or, you know, like, I've been researching all this punk stuff on TV recently. And have you heard of the TV show CPO Sharky?
No.
With Don Rickles playing like the sort of like Navy captain on the show. And the legend is they were looking for a punk band to play on the show, and they found the Dickies, who had just formed. And the Dickies play, and Pat Smear and Alice Bag are like dancing in the crowd, and Don Rickles is there watching the Dickies play. And according to legend, like, the Sex Pistols had just kind of like broken up, and A&M Records sent a guy down there being like, hey, there's this punk band playing on this show, see if they're any good, and if they're good, sign them. And you know, went up to them after their set or their song on this TV show, said, do you want to be on A&M Records? And that's how they got signed. Like, just like such a weird, everything seems like it could be a script from a Hollywood movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, we always talk about 90s hangups, you know, there's East Coast hangups.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've talked about this before too, you know, like, just how the East Coast just has that. Oh, well, I obviously can't do that because then I'd be a cornball. You know, I can't sell myself. I can't sign to this. I can't, you know, this or that, you know, when over there, like they don't even think twice, like they don't have those hangups, and good for them, man. I wish I was the same. I would hopefully not be slumming it here with you on this live podcast. If I was from LA, I'd be, you know what I mean? Overlooking my store in Tokyo or whatever the fuck could happen to me if I was from LA, you know?
I would have sold this podcast to Red Bull when they asked me to after the fifth episode.
Yeah.
it definitely, there's also like a lot more judgment too on the East Coast. Like on the West Coast, it seems like a band signs and it's like, you do you, more power to you, like whatever you need, love to see it.
Yeah.
Whereas here it's like, oh, they signed? Fuck them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm even trying to think, like, so many, are there like equivalents of the East on the East Coast? Just think about how many 90s alt and just regular rock bands from LA and the West Coast in general were have like intense punk backgrounds, like the Chili Peppers and stuff like that. You know, like, is there even equivalents on the East Coast? Like,
it would be like maybe, but that didn't make it, right? But well, made it, but not to like that level. I think like Quicksand would probably be the biggest.
No,
Civ, Mad.
No, that doesn't count. They're still trying to be like hardcore, sort of. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think Quicksand at a certain point, like when they were opening for the Deftones on tour, I think Walter would have been pretty happy to go for the alt rock ride. But like,
yeah.
But you're right. Like, it's not.
It's not Chili Peppers, man. It's not
the Chili Peppers. Flea was down, but like, it's not like Anthony.
Dude, Anthony wears a DOA shirt in. Yeah,
but
in but they were in the mix. You know, yeah. I'm not saying, you know what I'm like, you know, or whatever. Like, I just saw this like viral or not viral. I don't know. It came up on my feed the other day of the singer of Candlebox. He's like, when I was 12, Henry Rollins brought me on stage to sing, you know, Rise Above or whatever. I'm like, that's fucking Candlebox or punks. Like, what the fuck? And it made me check out the Candlebox LP because I was like, does Candlebox have tracks? I wonder, you know,
and, no tracks, though, I bet.
I'm pretty loose with tracks, you know, like I'm not like extremely judgmental, you know, and they did their thing, but you know, I'm not going to listen to them again, but you know,
they were like the Christian, like grunge band, right? Like that was the
I've never heard they were Christian, but maybe
I'm confusing them with another band, but
Candlebox were, did you guys have the Real World in Toronto?
We had it, but like way later, like the Miz season was like when they started showing it up here. Like it would be on sporadically, but not in any sort of way you could kind of follow like the Puck season and all that kind of stuff as it was happening.
Okay. I could do a podcast on the first five seasons of the Real World, like no problem. Like, you know,
I would love to just do the hardcore crossover moments and punk rock crossover moments throughout the Real World history, because there are a few
in Philly when they had the Philly one. Get out, just talking about this, that could have went wrong for them, like
so bad. It's like if you knew about punk and hardcore and you're watching that Philadelphia thing, you're like, wow, this could get really ugly.
Yeah,
so quickly. And yeah, there's probably some other less heinous ones throughout the course. Maybe in the Real World UK too.
Dude, the Real World, the UK one with the punk guy where the dude bites his tongue out when he's playing live. Did you see that?
Oh, what was his band?
I don't know. I don't know what his band was. That's a good question. They were kind of like maybe like a little like punk industrial crossover kind of sounding. Yeah, and they were playing live, and a dude, like some freaky guy in the front row, just like grabs him and like bites his tongue, like the dude had to go to like get surgery on the show. It was fucking sick.
I'm gonna look it up. Guy from the Real World punk band.
Yeah, Real World England. Yeah, and there was a American dude who was like was trying to be an F1 driver. There was a model, Jacinda. There is a playwright. See, I could do. I'm ready for a real world podcast. If anybody's putting one together, holler at me.
Oh my! There's actually a lot. Like there's apparently like some punk references in the San Diego season.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we'll have to unpack this in a future episode. Like just a
real for world
episode. I feel like if anyone would have been though on the real world. Or the real world equivalent of its time, or up on it, would have been the McDonald brothers.
Yeah, man, they're pretty interesting, man.
They're very also like when you see them, like until I met Steven, I don't think I ever realized how tall they were.
Mm.
And then when you see them in person, it's so disarming because they're also like just giant guys, and it's
wow,
like, it's like oh wow, like they must be 6'3".
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think they could dunk? I feel tiny around them.
Could they dunk, you think?
I was wondering, like, I think Steven probably could play basketball. Like, Southern California kids, right? Like, they're all, like, Keith Morris, when he was on the show, was kind of, like, talking about the violence that Southern California hardcore had. And he's like, we were all just, like, outdoor kids, man.
Yeah, like, I remember that.
Used to sports stuff. And so, they're not like me. They don't have the Dungeons and Dragons physique like I do. So I imagine they were probably playing sports.
Same. Yeah.
That's East Coast life. You know, we have to spend the winters indoors. We're insulating to keep ourselves warm.
Yeah. That's why. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Different physical aesthetic between East Coast and West Coast hardcore too.
Yeah. It's just the aesthetic. It's an aesthetic thing. It's a choice.
Back to, did you have a chance? I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the one that I did with Dave Markey and Jordan, who did the Bill Bartell documentary.
I don't think I listened to that one.
We get into the SST record store and Pat Smear working at the SST record store. And there's a song on Sonic Youth's Confusion Sex record.
Mm-hmm.
Experimental Jet Set Trash No Star record about going to the SST store that Dave Markey co-wrote with Thurston Moore. And apparently it was like right around then that Pat Smear got the offer to be in Nirvana, and which he accepted, like Kurt Cobain. But the reason I guess Kurt Cobain called to offer him the spot in Nirvana was because Kurt had heard that Flea had also called Pat Smear at the SST store to offer him the job playing guitar in the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And Pat's response was, is that guy Anthony still in your band? and Flea goes, yes. And he goes, oh, do you guys still play that funk stuff? And he said, yes. And Pat said, no, I'm good. I'm just going to work at the SST store, which Kurt Cobain thought was so hilarious that he decided to offer him the gig in Nirvana.
That rocks, man.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Pat Smear is so cool. He, you know, I didn't like know that he had like solo stuff until like semi recently, you know?
Yeah. And then he's also in this band, the Tater Tots, which Bill Bartell forms. And it was like a Beatles tribute band that the McDonald brothers were in as well, that played a Beatles fan festival as a Beatles cover band, but they were doing a tribute to Yoko Ono. They've got footage of it in the Bill Bartell documentary, and they're getting booed by all these Beatle fans who are screaming at them, just fucking hating every second of it. Pat Smear is one of the coolest people I've ever met in my life.
Yeah, I bet.
Being on tour with them is just like punishment summer camp for me. Like every fucking day, just... And he would neck a bottle of champagne on stage. We didn't play every day. It was like we'd play a day and then we'd have like 3 or 4 days off on that Foo Fighters tour.
Mm-hmm.
And Pat would just have his bottle of champagne, just be up there. There's crazy stories about him. I think I think it's like the Dave Grohl book about him like showing up at the airport one time for a Foo Fighters tour with like nothing, like no bags or anything.
Yeah, that's Arthur Rizik style.
Does Arthur do that?
Arthur showed up for the first Cold World European tour his book bag just had one t-shirt and just cords and like wires and stuff in it.
Walter Schreifels can top it. He doesn't fly with guitars anymore. I mean, so he'll show up and have to borrow gear.
I've never showed up with more than a snare drum to a one Cold World gig ever in my life, and I don't intend to.
Yeah. The headliner having to borrow gear from the opening band is like a sick style.
It's messed up, but hey. Yeah.
You guys can come, but you got to supply the back line for the whole tour because yeah. We need someone to do it. When I was at Punk Rock Bowling last year, and Walter had to borrow a guitar from like the booth that was like the Dunlop booth that was there to demonstrate like strings and picks, but they had guitars for display.
Oh my God.
Can I borrow this thing and play? The Pat Smear, kind of vibe though on, like of turning down those bands. Like I feel like that is, that's what we can all aspire to. And that's like, I think Pat's bullshit detector not wanting to be with the Red Hot Chili Peppers is all the indication I need.
Yeah, I mean, dude, he's the man. I mean, the one record, yeah, I just looked it up, Ruth and Smear from 87. The song Golden Boys is so good, I remember. I found out about this record like maybe like, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago when I was listening to it a lot. There's a lot of like SST stuff that I'm not familiar with. You know what I mean?
There's a lot of really good deep cut SST stuff that I feel. Yeah. Like the Grant Hart solo records too, that are on there. And I got to go through the Cruise Records catalog. That's like a catalog that I have never dove too deep in other than the All Records. Big Grill Car.
I don't mind All. A lot of people talk shit on All, but they got some tracks in my opinion.
Have you seen that Descendants documentary?
Yeah.
It's interesting when you watch it how conscious they are of people's dislike of All.
Yeah. I mean, All, you could tell, I don't know, they were always a victim of like weird 80s production. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of like reverby and like gated drums and stuff like that. And, you know, but it sounded like 80s skate video music that wasn't punk, you know, like, because there'd be like in 80s skate videos, like there was a lot of like music that was like just made for that. You know what I mean? Like the early Pal Peralta videos, you know what I mean? And you'd watch the credits and you're like, oh, this music was like made by them. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like, it's not quite punk. I don't know what the hell it is, you know, but there'd be like ripping solos and stuff.
It kind of points out like the great tragedy in being a band where you will get better as a band, but you will not be able to compete with people's nostalgia for whatever took with them. So like All at every stage has been better than the previous All in terms of like lead singer's capabilities. Obviously they're becoming better players. They're better in the studio recording themselves, but yet people only like people want the most is that Milo Goes to College era of Descendants. And I found that was like one of the most interesting parts of that documentary was seeing them kind of grapple with that.
You know what's weird though? I feel like what was the later Epitaph record? Everything Sucks.
Yeah, Everything Sucks.
Everything Sucks is the Agnostic Front gotta go of Descendants. That's amazing. Right, because we think like, oh yeah, everybody wants to hear. We at the end of the Descendants, you know, when we go to see them, they're like, oh yeah, they're gonna play Myage or you know whatever those songs are called, you know, or
Bikeage,
yeah, you know. And then so they play it, and we're like, okay, that's the song everybody wanted to hear. But then they're like, all right, here's the last song. And it's like a song from Everything Sucks. And people go 10 times crazier.
Yeah.
Because when you see Agnostic Front, you're like, oh, they just played, you know, Victim in Pain. The gig's over. And then they're like, all right, here's the last one. And it's gotta know. And like 2,000 people come in that you didn't even know were at the gig. And you're like, what the fuck?
Well, that song was on like the Epitaph comp, the Punkorama comps and stuff, right? Which sold millions and millions of copies. They might even have a song. Do they have a song on a Tony Hawk game or something?
I don't know, man.
Like one of those video games of that era too, right? Like,
no,
I feel like with the Descendants more than Agnostic Front, like the older catalog is so storied.
Like, it is, but you would be surprised on how many people
want to see that those
records. That Everything Sucks record is their Descendants record.
Yeah.
It's probably like the majority of people that go see them.
Yeah. I think that, Descendants also, like that last record they put out has some of my favorite songs on it.
Yeah, Everything Sucks rocks. You know, like they're still good, man.
That song Shameless Halo, which is on I think the second last record, maybe the last record, is one of my favorite Descendants songs ever. Like when I first saw them play it live, I was like, when we were on that tour with them, I'm like, how did I miss this song on their old records? That I went to the new record. I'm like, oh my God, it's a new song.
I'll have to check that one out.
They are, it's also funny to think about them and Red Cross being like adjacent bands together.
Yeah, that's true.
And even then, Red Cross, I don't think watched very many Descendant shows. It's funny because I posted a video for my eldest son's birthday of my eldest son when he was like a little, I think he's a year, and we're dancing on stage to the Descendants with Keith Morris, right? And you can't see the Descendants, but you can clearly hear it's a Descendants song.
Mm-hmm.
And Steven from Red Cross commented like, oh, I remember that day. That was amazing. And with Waves playing in the background too. How awesome. You definitely did not pay attention at all to the Descendants when you guys were playing together back in the day.
They're like, those guys are like, they're just like too cool for school. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they put their time in at punk, like, and just couldn't wait to be like, we're something else, man. Like we're on a different wave. Like they're like, I don't know. They're really interesting.
It's like, I remember like I went out to like party with these new friends of mine in high school and I did acid and I smoked weed, had a first beer and had a cigarette. And then the next day I went to try and play Dungeons and Dragons with my old Dungeons and Dragons friends.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh man, I'm too cool to do this anymore. Like I've crossed a line, and that's must be what it feels like to be Steven and Jeff McDonald.
Yeah.
Throughout that period where you're like, oh fuck, I've crossed this. Like we're already past this at every stage. They're past it.
They also just seemed like they were like, now they don't seem it. But when I heard them on, you know, in that episode, they seemed so with it and like smart and like, you know, cognizant of everything, you know, but I always kind of looked at them as like being like aloof, like, you know, like characters in that, like what's that one book that's, or a book and movie that's kind of about like Manson and the CIA and stuff.
Oh, the new one? I think they talk about
it. No, it's not what the hell is it? I don't know. They just seem like so LA and like aloof and like just like so cool that they're like not even doing anything on purpose. It is just like their trajectory of life's like they can't help it. Like, you know what I mean? Like they're like, but then at the same time, it's like I think of like, damn, like there was like Red Cross, like the early 90s Red Cross major label albums come out, and then like how did Urge Overkill happen while they were around? Like they should have been Urge Overkill, right? Like, and then there's the weird tie-in with Quentin Tarantino, which makes it even crazier. I didn't even know about that. You know what I mean? And like I always kind of like compared them with Urge Overkill because it's kind of like a similar vibe. But like Red Cross were probably so, like I said, like aloof that they couldn't even, you couldn't make an Urge Overkill out of them. You know, you, it's like you can't probably couldn't corral them, you know?
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a 1-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
And also it's like, and I say this because it's in the documentary, but like, Stevens dating Sofia Coppola, living with Francis Ford Coppola for a time, right? Like, they're making movies and all this kind of shit. Like, it's just so out-of-worldly compared to, like, a lot of other bands. Like, they're just, like, on this, like, yeah, like, just in a... But then it's also, like, really much, very much connected to, like, Circle One and all this, like, super... deep LA hardcore stuff, or playing shows with SSD and
yeah,
all this kind of weird shit. And then they become like a glam metal band and things like that too. So they've, I don't know. It's such a interesting story throughout the trajectory of this band. There's also a book, like an oral history of them. That's got even like some other wild stories.
Hmm. But they were like a proper metal, glam metal band, like a.
They teased their hair out and kind of like faked it. You can see some videos of it on YouTube, and would like play with like Poison.
I think really
Poison, yeah, like some of those Sunset Strip bands.
Oh wow!
And they're kind of like mocking them at the same time, and they had like the Red Cross kind of Kiss inspired metal logo.
Yeah,
and because they're like in LA, they're also at the same time like. Kind of, was it Psycom or whatever the pre-Jane's Addiction band that Perry Farrell had?
I don't know that, no.
That's like Psycom, I think it is. Anyway, they're playing with them too, or they know those guys, and they know the Sonic Youth people as they're kind of coming to town, and they're also with like White Cross and Bill Bartell. Like,
yeah,
they're a band that has like hands in so many different worlds, you know, like Paisley Underground, like the Bangles and all that stuff too. Like, they're, yeah, like a really hard band to pin down. And like, I love SSD, but there's like, you look at SSD's career and there's like this amazing period of hardcore, this kind of controversial, to put it politely, rock era. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. Whereas like talking about Red Cross, there's just so many weird like side quests in the Red Cross story.
Red Cross all seemed sort of on the same wavelength as each other too, right? Like where SSD, like the guys in SSD are so different from each other for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think they are very like, and also I think, you know, having two brothers do the band, it's like Springer and Al, there's not a lot of love loss. I think at different times between the two of them where,
yeah,
I think, Al and Springer is what I meant to say. Did I say that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, good. I was worried I said Steven there. But with Steven and Jeff, you know, they're family. They're there right. For each other and on similar journeys the whole way through. Sorry, my family's coming home.
Oh, it's all good.
Saying, I guess when you're live, you don't really get a chance to edit that stuff out. So now everyone knows that my family's out and they're coming home. So no one show up and try and kidnap me. My family's going to be home soon. So, I guess a poor choice of things to also talk about. A poor segue talking about kidnapping, but I think there's also like this, as much there is like sort of the sunny, wow, look at this crazy world of possibilities with Red Cross. There's also like some weird dark tragedies, like Stephen being kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
Explain the poor segue there. And also the drug use stuff, which I've never really talked to him about. But it certainly is something that comes up in the documentary kind of quite a bit. And Stephen did with his girlfriend at the time, who I believe was in the Bangles, a anti-drug PSA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's fairly open talking about it. So it just has never come up on the podcast because it gets in the way of talking about music.
Yeah.
On here. But there is sort of like this, which is like, I guess, LA too, right? Like there's a sort of like real positive sheen. And then.
Yeah. You know, and also it just ties in with AA or whatever. Like, you know, like you hear about like all Hollywood people, you know, they're going to meetings like every other day, you know, like that's just part of like that LA world. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I know a lot of people that have like met people through AA, or it just seems like that is, I guess like we're always looking for, you know, fraternal, some sort of like familial type situation to put ourselves in. And punk rock is that. And I guess, why wouldn't there be like an AA extension of that kind of,
it's probably why podcasts are so popular, right? Like
definitely.
Cause so many people that you wouldn't expect are able to sit and watch three morons talk about football for 4 hours a day. You know what I mean? And it's just like in the world that we're in now, like, you know, like it's, you don't have that, I don't know. There's that hole there to fill that, you know, that, people aren't face to face as much as they used to be probably.
Yeah. And like, you don't go out nearly as much, even to the office in
yeah.
places. So people kind of need that conversation. Like I find that's why I like having the podcast is just cause you're hearing people talk as opposed to like, I don't know. Like, there's only so much music you can listen to before you go a little crazy. You don't feel as lonely when you're hearing people talk to each other.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know. For some reason, most of my friends don't like podcasts. I'm a minority in my friend group, but I'm big into podcasts actually.
I think it's like you have to find the right conversation or the right people having the right conversation like for you. And I feel like there's a podcast out there for everybody. It's just like the right thing. It's weird though, like I can't listen to music podcasts in the way that I can listen to like a pro wrestling podcast or the Gilbert Godfrey podcast or something like that, where I find music podcasts because I'm always like, I want to get in on the conversation too much.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like, I want there to be like really good hip hop podcasts, but there are almost none. And I always have this feeling. I'm like, I might be the only person in the world who thinks there needs to be more hip hop podcasts. Because, you know, there's a million of them, but they all suck. They're all terrible. But yeah, I mean, most of the podcasts I like are just like people having conversations about life and just talking about, you know, whatever, you know, like, to be honest, like my wife always makes fun of me for like my favorite kind of shows, or she calls them women's interests, where it's like, you know, like the show Girls or like Working Moms and like, you know, Nick's watching his women's interest shows, you know, like my favorite podcast is called Trash Tuesday. And it's like Bobby Lee's ex-girlfriend and like, like two other, you know, women just like talking, you know, that's like my favorite shit.
I know. I recently, it was the subject of our group chat that you had a Cold World shirt made an appearance on that podcast.
Yeah. Thanks to, Turnout of Punk guest Ian Fidance. Yeah.
Is it Fidance or Fidance? Fidance?
I hear people say Fidance.
Damn. I think I introduced him as Ian Fidance on the show. No wonder we stopped our text friendship shortly thereafter his appearance on the show. But
I don't really know him that well. I met him at United Blood Fest and I was like, yo man, like you don't know me, but he like just bought a Coal World shirt, you know, so I felt like I could go up and introduce myself to him. And I was like, dude, like you're on like all the podcasts I love, you know what I mean? I was like, he's like, oh really? I was like, yeah, dude, like if you wear this Coal World shirt the next time you're on Trash Tuesday, I'll like, I won't even, you know, I don't even know what to do with myself, you know? So he did it. And that was so sick.
I think we should have like a rock and roll punk rock Jeopardy between Ian, Chappelle Lacey, and Chris Estrada. I think it would be an interesting battle. I think they have their three separate areas of expertise too.
That's the thing. Yeah.
You know, like, and actually Dan Licata too, he might be an outsider bet on that one. I think Chris Estrada might know the most about punk for all of them, but
probably like classic capital P punk for sure. Right.
Chris doesn't like Agnostic Front though. So that's his handicap right there.
Yeah. Cause then you're getting into capital H hardcore.
Yep. Yep. That's where Dan Licata might be. Anyway, we should set this up. This could be a really good episode of this show.
Yeah, we could be the hosts of it.
I'm trying to think if this is the most punk rock representation there's been in stand-up comedy. There's always been terrible punk rock stand-up comedians, as we know, because there's always been like the person at the show that wants to get up on stage and do comedy before the hardcore band starts.
Yeah.
Not always terrible, but sometimes. But
well, there's this guy from Wilkes-Barre, Jay Elliott. I don't know if I might have told you about this before, but he used to sing in a band called Guardrail in the 90s. And he would get up in between bands and he would tell like stupid jokes, and he'd be like, hey, the person with all the stickers on the back of your car, you're getting towed. You know, that would be the joke.
I think it'd be hard to do crowd work at a show like that. You know, you get knocked out very quickly.
I mean, he's doing it like tongue in cheek, you know, like kind of like, you know, he's cool. He knew what he was doing, but it was, I loved it.
Good Clean Fun would also do a little bit of, they would have a little stand up in their sets.
Yeah.
What's that? 1-2-3-4 Go Crew. 1-2-3 Go Crew. He was like the comedy rapper, straight edge rapper guy. He had an X watch around his neck, like Flava Flav style, but it was an X watch.
I don't remember that. I remember Fort Knox.
What was Fort Knox?
Fort Knox was what's the dude from Battery and Better Than a Thousand?
Ken Oldham.
Ken Oldham, yeah. Like, I think he had like a straight edge rap group called Fort Knox.
Oh, I gotta hear this. I have not heard this
before. Yeah, how have you not heard this? Yeah, they had like records, and they had like a CD or a tape or something.
Maybe
I don't know.
I remember this from back then. Didn't also Richie Underdog have like a rap record too?
I never heard of that.
Maybe I'm mistaking that. Maybe I'm confusing two things now.
Yeah, Fort Knox.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like, if you're going to think of like what would be the funniest of the comedy punk bands back then. Spaz.
I don't know. Maybe I think Razzle Dazzle is the funniest punk band.
Razzle Dazzle was very funny. I will definitely, but they're, it was funny. Like, it was like weird humor that it was funnier if you,
there, the thing is, because their stuff, they were like, yo, I remember when they were coming out with Razzle Dazzle, because, you know, like they told me, like, it's just all of our inside jokes. We're not going to explain it to anyone. And we're going to see if hardcore kids are stupid enough to actually mosh and sing along to something that they don't even know what it is. Like, you know what I mean? And it worked, you know, and it was just like a troll on hardcore kids, you know? So it was amazing.
I get, like, yeah, they were really funny. The circles and the number five stuff. There was a lot of things that, you know, Coal World, you guys were also like very like fighting in the limo on the way to the show in Montreal.
I mean, I think we're the funniest just straight up funniest hardcore band of all time, you know, but that's another episode.
I'm trying to think of other, like, you know, like Bar Fight I don't know if it was.
By the way, speaking of that, I'd like to apologize to everyone that was at the LDB Fest 2 weeks ago. I'll publicly say now that we are the ones who broke one of the two elevators in the hotel. So for the whole day, there was a line going through the whole hotel to use the one elevator because the whole fest was staying at this hotel at this hotel. And we're coming down and we're on two different floors. And Dan gets in and he of course pushes all of the buttons on the elevator and it starts doing weird stuff. The door is like, we're like, oh my God. So we're like, all right, let's get the other elevator. So we call the other elevator and it comes and Arthur grabs Dan and pushes him into the broken elevator while we get into the working one and he slams into the door and breaks it even more. And so we, you know, we're like, oh my God. And then Skase is like, I don't see any cameras. I think we're good. You know, so we leave and then like later we come back and the line is going through the entire hotel to use the elevator and everyone's so pissed off. And then later on in the day it was working. So they got somebody to come out and fix it. And we thought we were good. But then Dano a week later told us we were hit with a bill. They did their research and found out that it was us.
You guys are like Grown Ups 3, the movie.
Yeah, it was something.
The best thing, they tracked you down for it too. It's like, okay.
Dan's a grandfather. Dan's a straight up grandfather. He has a grandson.
No, he's a grandfather.
You know?
Oh, it's the best. We first time in Vancouver, we got into like a play fight in the elevator and broke the elevator and stuck in there for 3 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They had to get the fire department to rescue us. Yeah. It was
not really.
And then we went and got interviewed by Nardwar.
Nice.
And his radio show. I could probably still get stuck in the elevator. I don't think I could still get interviewed by Nardwar.
No, I would knock that dude out. Like I can't.
You knocked Nardwar out.
Yeah. I couldn't rock with dude, man. I don't know.
He got, I guess, like the most violent reaction he ever got was like Thurston Moore. It was pretty violent with him. Oh,
Rollins wasn't fucking with him, right?
Rollins wasn't. Lydia Lunch and Exene Cervenka. That's one of the roughest Nardwar interviews.
I didn't see that one.
It's on Nardwar's YouTube channel. And it's pretty heinous. It goes on for so long too, where they very clearly like, and you kind of see, it's one of the rare times that you see Nardwar kind of get pissed off in a way where he's a little more combative with them than he normally is. And
yeah,
a little more punchy. It's not your kinder, gentler 2025 Nardwar. I'll tell you that much. I want to see a Nardwar Red Cross interview. That would be fucking crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely a fan.
I wonder. Yeah, I wonder if he is. I wonder what he's a fan of other than garage rock.
I feel like he has to be into early LA punk.
I get. Yeah, I know he's definitely into all the Vancouver stuff, like crazy deep into Vancouver. He's crazy deep into everything and all. The conversations, like, I can't imagine he's listening to a lot of the stuff by these artists that he's interviewing now.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I mean, you know, he's out of here. You know,
he was, and I gotta say, like, he did that university radio show. He did TV in Toronto and Canada for years, like going back to like the early 90s. He's doing this stuff, so.
And he always had the same shtick, or?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's not really a shtick. It's kind of like who he is.
Hmm.
And
he's like the Sheik.
Yeah, he's like, he's living the gimmick, brother.
Yeah.
And he did one thing for Much Music where he got like a dune buggy and drove around Toronto and found like all the old punk spots from records. Like, here's where the Ugly had their graffiti from the Ugly 7-inch. And then he's like in front of the wall and like, it was amazing. Like that, like the, some of the stuff he did for Much Music. And then when I was working at Much Music, I'm like, we got to get Nardwar back. They're like, yeah, we never paid him for any of that shit back in the day. And so they were just like exploiting the shit out of him.
Oh, they were going to say, yeah, we hate that guy.
they pretty much, you know, said as much with the payment of him.
Yeah.
And the reimbursement of that thing. Well, Woj, I think we should try and keep these to an hour.
Okay.
And we're well, just
let's talk about Billy Idol real quick.
Oh yeah. Did you listen to the Billy Idol one?
Yeah, man. I like really loved it.
Okay. Let's talk Billy Idol. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know. He's an interesting guy, man, because I mean, first of all, have you ever heard the Cyberpunk LP?
Yes. It was like, that's the thing. When I got on the phone with him, I got starstruck. Like in a way that I've very rarely gotten starstruck on this podcast when I've interviewed someone. Cause like, I was like, oh my God. Like I remember being like a little kid reading Cracked magazine and seeing caricatures of him.
Yeah.
Beside like Rocky and Prince caricatures. Right. Like it's that level of guy. So yeah, Cyberpunk, all those records were like very much in my mind as a young person.
I remember like seeing it cause it came out in 93 and it was like, obviously like a huge failure because it like went right to like the cutouts. Like you remember cutouts?
Yeah, cut open. Yeah.
You know, so it was like it was a cutout record. So you know yeah. And
it was also Columbia House. I remember the Columbia House had it forever. Mm. You could get it. Like I think that's where I got my copy was like when I got
so you owned it? You owned Cyberpunk?
Yeah, because it was like you know 1993. I'm getting into punk. I can also get 10 CDs for a penny. I'm like, oh this one. I heard about this guy, he's punk. So yeah, definitely as a kid.
Huh. That's interesting. Okay. I mean, it's an interesting record because it, you know what it, you know, when I think of like, oh, if I was going to make Cyberpunk, the album, you know, it would sound like Alec Empire mixed with Discharge. You know what I mean? But his, like, it actually sounds like an 80s anime soundtrack. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you know how like the music in like old anime is like real corny and like kind of like.
It's like Japanese wrestling music too, where you have like this, the synthesizer electric guitar type tone.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Yeah. It sounds like Crush Gals, you know, like, you know, it's, but it's like, so if you think of it like that, it's like, yeah, this is kind of like awesome, but he didn't know that it sounded like that. He thought it sounded like music. He thought it sounded like, Metalhead's Platinum Breaks 2 compilation, you know what I mean? But really, it sounded like I don't know, you know.
It's interesting when you listen to his book. His book's incredible; like it is a wild ride.
Yeah, I gotta read it.
But he is someone who, like, punk is who he is. Like he never stops referring to himself as being punk, and like his whole thing throughout the book is like, oh, I wanted to take the punk thing that I was doing to this other place and start mixing with dance music, or like I was trying to think what the next iteration of punk would be. So it's like it's not never like he like quote unquote sells out in sort of the classic sense of like turning his back on where he came from. Like I think he always looked at what he was doing as being an extension of who he was as the first guy in Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
I find it interesting though, he hasn't ever done the Generation X reunion.
I mean, I don't know really anything about those guys' relationship. Are they all still alive?
Well, Durwood is certainly, you know, around. And like, I think he talks so highly of Durwood in the book. Like he's like one of the great guitar players. And like on that episode too.
Yeah. He bigs him up. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'd be so sick if the two of them did a record.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be awesome. I mean, or even gigs, you know, like I would go see Generation X, like that'd be amazing.
Yeah.
But they are a band that gets like really glossed over for sure, you know?
I think he's so big that it's kind of hard to appreciate them as this sort of like their own thing without it being coming off like the prologue to the Billy Idol story.
Yeah. You know, it's also funny like how everyone from that era are like, well, you know, in 78 punk was over, you know, and you're like, what do you mean? You know, like what does that fucking mean? Punk was over in 78. Like, I don't understand what that means. You know what I mean? Like, I have a hard time like really figuring out what they really mean by that.
You already see like there's that Punk 77 documentary that's like a German, maybe it's in 78, but it's like a German film crew went to London and interviewed a bunch of bands. Like the bands that are in it are crazy. Like it's like a who's who.
Mm-hmm.
And they're already all talking about how punk is over. It's like it's become so fascist. All these other people are into it now and it sucks. And that's, I think, I love that because that is almost like the hallmark of punk is that your punk is always going to be the best. And yeah, the punk that comes after will never understand how good your punk was.
But they also like didn't. When you are on the ground floor of something, right? Like a punk or a hip hop or, you know, something that fucking sick. You don't know that it's going to be around forever. You think this is the thing we did and now we're stopped doing it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like you kind of have the authority to say it's over from your view. You know what I mean? But meanwhile, you don't know that, you know, hey, Discharge is about to come out, dog. Like, you know,
yeah.
For certain people, this shit's just jumping off. But, you know, to them, and also like it's something we always talk about where we like compare the States to England, you know, and England is so small that they go through trends so fast and every little thing is, you know, like fucking Death in June, we're getting record reviews in the NME. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that was, it's not like that here, you know, like that's another thing that's like, so, you know, like, you know, if you go back and you read an issue of like Spin or something from 1992 or Rolling Stone or something, it's like unreadable. Cause they're talking about like Steve Winwood and shit like that. You know what I mean? Like it's crazy. The difference between it's like almost like the press in Japan, like, you know, or like the minutia of punk was getting covered in
the press. That's why I think stuff breaks in England so much easier than it does over here because there's almost like a more permeable membrane to the mainstream. Like now it's obviously all changed, but like back then, because you had weekly papers that had to write about this stuff. So there's only so many times they can write about like, yeah, the Steve Winwoods of the world or like whatever reunion old band, like they're going to have to cover something else. And especially something salacious or exciting and vibrant. I find it's like moths to a flame with the press in England back then. And that definitely, I think, is also is what exasperates things and kind of forces things to kind of like have these super accelerated life cycles where it goes from being cool to being terrible in like the span of a year because everyone's writing about it all the time. And so people are just sick of it by the time.
Yeah. And I also think this might have something to do with it being such a small, like a smaller country, but youth subcultures and youth stuff in general is a bigger thing. Maybe not now, like now in America, it's a little different, but you know, in the 80s, I mean, look, like growing up, like watching TV shows, like you barely saw like young people, like, you know, I don't know. You just think about like music in the 80s, like it seemed like it was, you know, like everybody was old, like, you know, I don't know. England seems like it has like youth culture. Like,
yeah. And I think your like youth culture, your cultural signifiers became, and once again, probably changed now, but became almost like tattoos on your body. Like, you know, like talking about that skinhead cop show where she's got the tattoos on her knuckles. Like you meet people and you know, they're older punks. Whereas I think in North America, people like, oh, I used to be a punk. And then they're dressed completely normal now. Whereas in England, it's like, hey mate, I'm almost a punk. And it's like, no shit. You still have dyed green hair.
Yeah. And you're delivering for UPS and you have your Liberty spikes still or whatever.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Like it feels like, and that's like, goes back to like Teddy Boys and Mods where there's like, it's like your whole family, like it's a whole family of Teddy Boys and they're carrying it with them as a sort of tradition. And punks too. You see that with the punks. I guess you get that a little bit in North America, but I know when we played like whatever the Blackpool Festival is, Rebellion in Blackpool, You see all these like little kids with their punk parents there.
Yeah. I mean, here, I think it's a thing to like, there's an expiration date. You grow out of your stuff. You know what I mean? Like, which, I mean, I don't know. It probably has to do, I don't know about in comparison to England, because England is obviously a capitalist society as well. But, you know, in the States, I always just think of how ultra capitalist it is. And it's like, hey, it's time to get your shit together, because this is a dog eat dog country, and it's not time to be rolling on the floor in the basement. You know what I mean?
It's like, no more rolling on the floor. Now you got to become a DJ and throw cakes at people in the audience.
Yeah, make some real money.
That's what you got to do. That's how you grow up in America. And like, you also don't have, and I guess there are some, but like the idea of like all these punk bands just never breaking up and just constantly like playing a pub, or every couple of years playing like,
yeah,
Rebellion Festival.
Yeah. Because like in the States, like every band coming back together and like playing like that's a new thing. Right. But in like the UK subs and the business and, you know, like Sham 69, like those bands never stopped playing. The Exploited, like, you know what I mean? Like when you would go to see Warzone in the 90s, they'd be opening for those bands, you know?
Like, yeah. Like Business went on tour with Madball in the
90s. Yeah. Yeah. All those bands, they never stopped. They never stopped. Yeah.
And also, I guess like, it's weird because Negative Approach, even Agnostic Front, feels like adjacent to like Sonic Youth or Degeneration X Degeneration.
Degeneration, yeah.
Yeah. It's conflating wrestling now.
Is Degeneration the East Coast version of Red Cross?
It kind of is when you talk to people about Howie Pyro and Jesse Malin and like, yeah. And it's funny because when I was talking to Bill Bartel, when I was talking to Dave Markey about the Bill Bartel documentary, they said that the one person they would have loved to have talked to was Howie Pyro, because they feel that Howie was a part of this sort of like group of friends with also, I guess, Red Cross being another part of it that's connected through Bill Bartel. So yeah, I 100% agree with you. That is kind of like the East Coast version of, and, I think it speaks to a lot of our earlier points on the way like they were taken up and operated versus Red Cross.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know too much about Degeneration, but like, yeah, I don't know.
They opened for Kiss.
Yeah.
Like an extended run. You know what I'm obsessed with, speaking of New York stuff, kind of from that era? How the hell is the Reagan Youth song the song that in Airheads they're trying to get on the radio?
I mean, there's parallels. Like there's like Pump Up the Volume with the Descendants Wiener Schnitzel song or whatever it is. Like,
yeah, but they reference the Descendants. They never once say like, oh, we covered this band Reagan Youth song. Like they pass it off as their song. And then the very end of the movie, there's Brendan Fraser, and like, and you know, Steve Buscemi and Adam Sandler covering Reagan Youth, like something that hardcore bands weren't even cool enough to do around that time.
I mean, Buscemi's ahead, obviously.
Yeah, but I guess, but like that deep to be like a Reagan Youth.
If he was rocking with the Cro-Mags and stuff, like,
yeah, I don't. Was he rocking with the Cro-Mags?
Yeah, because he I remember when I saw Cro-Mags at CB's one time, he was in the back. Okay. He like came and like met like, and then like everybody was walking out and like JJ went up to him and they like had like a little like reunion or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So he was, yeah, I think he was ahead. I don't know about.
He's all over that documentary about Joe Strummer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he came to a fucked up show once, but it was because his kid's band was opening. So I don't really feel like.
Oh, yeah, you told me that before.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing in the Billy Idol episode is when you bring up the Stranglers and Don Letts kind of like throwing shade to them, and he's like, yeah, there was elitism. He's like, but at the end of the day, like, they were a part of the thing, and it's pretty interesting. You know, I wonder what the dynamic was between a lot of guys at that time. I don't know.
I feel like especially early on, it was like a real age based thing. Like, you're too old. And they didn't want to be in a band with Gene October because they thought he was too old to be, you know.
And like, Don Letts is like so cool. He's like one of the coolest dudes of all time.
Yeah.
And these Stranglers dudes were like semi pub rockers, like sounded like the Doors a little bit. Yeah, I could see it, you know. But I don't know. I just thought that was really interesting.
It was one of my favorite moments ever, is being on stage in Montreal and Zach Blair just innocuously throwing in the Stranglers into a list of bands and just watching Don Letts like turn and like physically turn to him, but also just like go from smiling and laughing to just like, they were not part of our thing. Like, how fucking dare you throw them into this conversation right now?
Damn. So
there was certainly a vitriol for some people towards them. I think they also, I don't know, like, I don't want to label it, but like, they got that song Peaches. I think they had a little more of kind of like a older bro kind of vibe.
Yeah. They were a little sex rock, a little sexy,
a little sex rock.
They were like, they were, I mean, I always kind of like thought they were like kind of Doors influenced.
You know? Yeah. The keyboard certainly.
Yeah.
Subject to one of the first punk rock diss songs with the Rude Kids, dissing them on the "If It's So Quiet, Why Don't You Play?"
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I guess they canceled a tour of Sweden and the Rude Kids lashed out with a diss on the Stranglers. So it did not stop the border. Also, speaking of not stopping at the border, this comes up in the Billy Idol book. He was on that very first tour, and I've talked about it on this episode too, that the Sex Pistols did, where they went to France
for the weekend. Yeah, yeah.
And they played with the Stinky Toys and maybe the Dentists, who aren't to be confused with the Nazi Dentist band from England.
Yeah, yeah.
The Dentist, the punk band, was, I think, one of the first punk bands ever from France.
You know, something else I was thinking while listening to the Billy Idol, and it goes back to our LA versus New York. What are the LA equivalents? Because New York has a close early punk tie with 70s UK punk, even down to the Misfits almost touring with the Damned. You know what I mean? Like, and obviously there was a connection between the Heartbreakers and the Sex Pistols and you know, and all those fellas. Like, is there any equivalent with any LA bands?
Definitely. Avengers, yep. Steve Jones produced that Avengers 12-inch.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the Damned, Rat Scabies, he produced one of the early records. I'm forgetting which one now. But he, like, the Damned kind of played an early show down there and hung out with everybody. And, yeah, like, it's geographically, I guess, further, but there is certainly, like, that connection between those bands. And, like, the Sex Pistols breaking up in San Francisco, the Avengers were opening that show. But I'm trying to think of bands that would have toured from the West Coast to the UK. Who would have been the first kind of,
I mean, Black Flag came out in 79, right? So that's after,
but I don't think they toured, you know, the UK till much later. I'm trying to think of like, who would have been like the first LA punk band to do like a UK tour. The Go-Go's went on tour with the Specials and Madness, like pre Two Tone Records kind of era. And we're on Stiff Records.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's just like a little later, right? Like, I guess that's
79.
Yeah. Right?
Like that single.
Yeah, but punk was dead in 78, mate. You know?
It takes a little bit. It's weird because it definitely, I don't know, like it's within a matter of a couple years, but I think it starts a little bit later on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Even though there's proto-punk bands as early.
I mean, it's kind of weird, like, to think of, like, not weird, but, like, really, like, L.A. punk doesn't get really big until hardcore, right? Like,
Yeah. Well, yeah, they talk about like the first 100 people or something in the Mass Club.
Yeah.
There was like just this core group of like kids that were going to all the shows. But yeah, hardcore comes in. And that's when it, and it never stops being sort of the biggest kind of scene after that point. Like once you have those Olympic Auditorium shows with hundreds and hundreds of kids showing up to see these bands. And then, you know, to this day, like I remember going to see AFI play in Santa Cruz and just being like, holy shit, this stuff's really popular out here. And kids were moshing for AFI in a way that they wouldn't have moshed necessarily on the East Coast. Like they were like, it was like they were a hardcore band on the East Coast, and on the West Coast, or sorry, on the West Coast, they were a hardcore band. And on the East Coast, I think they were much more a punk band.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I love that sort of geographical variance that kind of happens in punk rock, where certain things don't connect as well in certain areas or connect differently in different areas.
Yeah. I look at like the Youth Crew revival, you know what I mean? Like a lot of like people I know from the West Coast, like they were, you know, they didn't care about Floor Punch or whatever when they were out, you know, they were.
Yeah. Awesome. That was like an East Coast thing. I think the Youth Crew revival. And then when it got to the West Coast, it was already kind of like leaning into sort of like the Amazing Core.
Yeah.
Version of that thing, like the post. And it even happens the first time around with Youth Crew. Like I know obviously Uniform Choice and all this sort of stuff, but like it, to me, it's like really kind of like 89, 90 Inside Out, post Inside Out era that you have like the West Coast answer to Youth Crew.
Yeah. Cause you had like Walk Proud and, you know, Hard Stance was like 90, right?
Yeah. Like Hard Stance. You have like those, or Hard Stance. Yeah. Like maybe late 80s, 88. Cause like you do have those bands, but I feel like the vibe is a lot.
They were like also rans. They were, you know, they were like local, you know what I mean? Like they had 7 inches and stuff, but they, you know, yeah, I agree. Yeah.
The Chain of Strength, post Chain of Strength kind of things change. We're going to be talking a lot about this on the Ray Capo one, I'm sure, though.
Yeah, man, that one's going to be, I can't wait for that,
that
one.
That one's going to be a hot one. Oh my God. The next episode that's going to be coming out is Kurt from the Fastbacks. And
yes,
which you and me have talked about for years with Tony Molina.
Yeah.
Talk about Tony Molina on the episode. And yeah, it's good. There's some good stuff on it. I'm excited for you to hear it.
Sick. I can't wait.
Well, everyone, thank you for listening. And I don't think Woj and I, we don't need to communicate right now, I think. So we'll just keep, how do they find you if they want to get in touch with you? Cole World, just go see Cole World live.
Yeah, don't get in touch with me.
Don't get in touch with Woj.
Nah.
I'm going to stop. I wonder now, how do I stop this? Well, there's like so many people, like we're talking as we're, there's like lots of comments.
Oh, we're missing comments?
Yeah, there's so many comments.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.